Nun Vav is unique in that it gives us some of our most idioms. Now, there was a little poem that I sent around you.
Sure.
There was a man named Shimon Pog, Shimon Shmuel Pog, born 1860, died 1916, just briefly. I had a cheder education, ended up living for quite a while in St. Petersburg, which was, of course, beyond the pale. Jews were not allowed to live there unless they, unless somebody made them into a servant. If they were registered as a servant in a household, it could be there. He was there for a while. He became a shtickl maskil, but his number one love was the Tanakh, which he knew well. He was a baltzfinner. He had come from a father who was a baltzfinner. And ended up, as it was, finally dying in Odessa. 1916, you know, of course, that he made it to the revolution. But he recognized and he lived through the major pogroms in 1880, 1890, right? Throughout Russia. And he based something, this was, believe it or not, originally written in Yiddish, and he had Hebrew books. He both the Yiddish and the English one. Now, you all know this from a song. It's actually a Russian folk song. So it goes as follows. Hagidi li imi. Tell me, my mother. Ha'umnam hem kenim. Is it true? Divrei hazaken yom yom li yabia. What grandpa has said over and over. That there before God's throne, in the kingdom on high, there is a cup. It's a bechel, a gavia, a bechel. The original word was a bechel. That's been there since the beginning of time. And for every trouble that comes upon us, by the cruel ones, by our enemies, a tear falls into this cup from the God who watches and cries to see what happens to us. And when this cup in heaven will be filled, Yavo Eleinu Mashiach, Tzidkenu Mashiach will ultimately come. He is the Mashiach for whom we have been yearning so many years, over 2,000. And the mother answered, yes, it's true, my dear son, yes, it's true. But she tells it to him sadly, and the child remained quiet. And her heart yearned and cried. And to which he finally asks, tell me, mother, until when, until what will this wondrous cup not be filled? Perhaps it has no bottom. Perhaps there's holes in the bottom. And the child, with eyes black as ravens, filled with yearning and sorrow, looks at his mother with sparks. And his mother, bent over, could not answer, but had a tear coming down her cheek. That tear went into God's cup. Okay. The source for this is actually a medrash that tells us two things. Underneath God's throne, there is a livnat ha-sapir. It is a sapphire, gigantic sapphire brick, which glows of the shades of all heaven. It is composed of, it is made of, all the tears that God collected and compressed into this. There is a separate medrash that says that God has a nod. It is a canteen, usually made of a animal skin, and that one is filled with not human tears, but God's tears. And that when that will ultimately be filled, Mashiach will finally come. The poem, the inspiration for the poem, is this Mizmor 56. למנצח על יונת אלם רחוקים, לדוד מכתם, באחוז אותו פלישתים בגת. In the entire verse is nothing more than an introduction. It's not actually the body of the poem. They translated the word elim as oaks, the dove of the oaks. And Elah is an oak.
Elah.
Now, Elah also means goddess. El Elah, because it means strong. An oak is strong. Mm-hmm. And it has a very solid, short, at least the Middle Eastern ones have short trunks with a very wide spread. And it was actually worshipped by the Canaanites. There is no source. I looked up everything I could in all of our sources to indicate that this was anything about oaks. A more recent translation fixes it, and what they do is they simply transliterate it. They'll say, a psalm to the leader or to the conductor for Yonat Rechokim, and they actually transliterate because they can't make any sense of it. I'll explain to you why this is so difficult. The word Yonah means a dove. Yonah means the dove of. The way it was translated, I told you, by the King James and so on originally, is the dove of the oaks. If the Elah is female, even if it has an ending, the word is Rechokim, of the distant oaks. Because the word Rechokim is plural, and it's an adjective, and would modify Elim. Okay? But the word is not Elim. It's Elem. And Elem and Elem means mute or muteness. An Elem is a mute. Elem means muteness. And is the root for the word Almana. Mm. Widow. Believe it or not. Alman. Almana. Because there's muteness that comes from not the, an innate physical issue that you cannot speak. Mute could be because there's no one to speak to. It's been a shtume in Yiddish, you say sometimes. When you say, I have no one to talk to, I may as well be mute. There's no one to hear me, nobody hears me, I must be mute. Okay? And the concept of a widower, is that they have lost who they can speak to. That's essentially it. You remain. In other words, by the time the day is over at night, you go home and the house is
quiet.
Fire. Now, what makes it strange is that I don't have any connecting words. Yonat, dove of what? Elem rechokim. It should be elem rachok, if it's singular. You see? So they didn't know what to do with it. The adjective is plural. The word that it modifies is singular. The word beforehand is connected to something that has no connection to. That's why it was problematic. So what have your English translations done with the first verse?
For the conductor regarding the distant dove of silence.
So now they decided it's a distant dove. That Rechokim modifies Yonah. But it's one. It should be Yonah Rechoka, not Rechokim. So Rashi goes and tells us as follows, that David was speaking about himself. Now, what makes him like a dove? The dove, on the one hand, is not a bird of prey, is a bird that, I know it's a symbol of peace, but it's exactly indicates somebody quite vulnerable. It mates for life, and it comes home. The other thing is that its cry is very mournful. And he'll use this in several other places where he'll speak about birds having, everybody else has a home and I don't have a home. I yearn for my home like the Yonah. He then tells us that it's a michtam. Now, michtam is a kind of a poem. Rabbi Shimshon Refaelius argues that it is a poem written in the format of a kameya. Now, when you think of kameya, many of you think about this like magical thing you're going to hold and it's going to protect you. But I want you to think of it as the word cameo. Once upon a time, people had cameos in which they would actually carve on the ivory. They would carve out the likeness of the person that you were trying to keep near your heart. And on the inside, maybe the person's name or their birth date or a piece of hair. So a kamea, michtam, he argues, comes from the same kind of a thing. And it is not unlike the word michtav. Please notice that nobody seems to define it. Does anybody tell me what a michtam is? Because they know that it's a kind of a poem. I want you to think of it in terms of the following. Think of it in terms of what we would think of as there's a sonnet. There's a haiku. There's a little kind of structured little poem that you write in a particular way, which is relatively easy to remember, and which a person records as a memory of an event in their life, either a happy one, or as you some will turn out to be, a sad one. And then the rest of it, it tells us, all this was written when, Be'echozoto plishtim begat, when the word that's missing here is melech plishtim, when the king of plishtim held him in Gat. So there I needed the rest of the story, which is why I wanted the Tanakh. The reference here is, and Radak makes that very, very clear, is Shmuel Aleph. David, you all remember, he went to bring his brothers food and water. When he heard Goliath challenging the Jews to come out, and everybody's cowering, and he said, I'll go. And Shaul says, my boy, you're wearing a tunic, you've got nothing on you. And all he had at the time was, if you remember, was a little pouch with five stones. Shaul offers him his armor. And he says, oh, that's much too heavy and much too big. I can't. I wouldn't be able to do it. But Shaul clearly knows who this kid is. And he goes out there. And the rest is history. He hit him. As he was marching out there, Shaul says, who's that boy? Well, he knows him. So why is he asking this question? Why does he know him? Because David, as much as he was a learner to the lyre, was also renowned for his ability to play the harp and to sing these marvelous, melancholic, beautiful songs. And Shaul had been plagued for many, many years with melancholia. And when he would come, he would do music therapy. And the music therapy was not just playing music, but he would sing the songs. There, Tehillim has some of the best descriptions of what it feels like to be depressed. And when he would come, he would make him feel good, and then he would go back home. And then when he was desperate again, they called him. And word had somehow gotten out that this is what he could do. Well, the kid can sing, but now he's already a bigger warrior too. And Shaul, in his paranoia, is beginning to suspect something. So when he offered him his armor, he was actually offering him to see, does he want to wear that? Now, Shaul had offered anybody who dares go out there would get his daughter's hand in marriage. That daughter, Shaul quickly married off, but there was another girl, and her name was Michal. Michal married David. David's successes in subsequent raids and battles that continued with the Philistines was incredible. And while it's his son-in-law, the jealousy begins to rage, and he plots to kill him. Mm-hmm. He comes up with all kinds of ways of trying to do it over and over and over again. The last one is when he actually goes up, sends people up to go into the bedroom. Michal knows what her father's design is. Her father demands her loyalty and asks her to participate in this. She is daddy's girl, but she also loves David, and torn between the two of them, she puts an effigy in the bed, and meanwhile lowers him down the window, and he runs for his life. There is a warrant out now. It's no longer a secret. We're not trying to kill him secretly. He's out to kill him. And at this point, anybody who aids and abets the fugitive will be punished by death. Yonatan is Shaul's son. They are best friends. Yonatan does not believe that his father really wants to kill him, because he also knows that his father is extremely dependent on him. And it's one of the lessons of dependency. When we depend somebody, we will probably grow to hate them, because we hate the feeling of dependency. Yonatan says, no, it's not the case. So Yonatan goes and investigates and finds out, in fact, that his father does have every intention of killing David. What ends up happening is, in the 21st chapter, he makes it into Nov. Nov is a city of Kohanim. You know that there were now a lot of Kohanim. Don't need that many in Beit HaMikdash. Initially, there was just a handful, but they've increased. They have towns where they live. David goes in there, and he has no food, he has no armor, he has nothing with him. Because remember, he came out of the window, just fled for his life. And he sees Achimelech with Kohen, and he tells Achimelech, I'm here on a secret mission the king has sent me, which he had done in the past. So this was not, it was a credible lie, if you like. I need food. I need water. I fled. I don't have my arms with me. He says, I have only one piece. Achimelech had been made guardian of that very famous sword, that heavy sword of Goliath, Goliath's sword. So he gives him Goliath's sword, and, you know, it turns out that one of Shaul's advisors comes in. He is, remember, they're pursuing him. They come into the city. Have you seen him? Well, yes, he came in for such and such. David already gets a sniff that somebody's on his trail. Mm. He runs off. The 21st chapter tells us the following events happen. Fleeing from place to place, he makes it into Gat. In other words, he crosses the border into the area that we would think of as the extent of Gaza Strip. Now, he tries to go in incognito when somebody recognizes him and says, isn't that David that killed Goliath? And they arrest him and bring him, you know, and insist that he be killed. They bring him before the king, Achish, the king of Gath. David has only one way out. He acts like a lunatic. He begins to have the spittle run down his beard. He acts crazy. And he acts like he cannot speak. He knows no language. Now you understand the mute? And Achish, you bring me this lunatic and you say, this is David, are you insane? And that's where one of our famous sayings comes, Hachasar Meshugaim Anochi, do I lack for lunatic? He gets away with it. They finally let him go, and off he runs again. But he was held for a while. And this is the poem that he composed. In the interim, Doeg HaEdomi goes into, this is Shaul's advisor, goes into the city, they investigate, and Shaul orders a massacre of the entire city at Nov. They murder men, women, children, babies, everyone is killed. Now, remember, he's acting like he can't talk. And it's a prayer. Amichtam is a little prayer. Chaneni Elokim kishe'afani enosh. Have mercy upon me, and he calls upon Elokim. Kishe'afani enosh. Now, lish'of, she'ifa is an aspiration. Lish'of avir is to take in, aspire, right? If so, Rashi says, she'afani enosh, they aspire to swallow me. Take it all in. And who, mere mortal, wants to take me in, suck me in? The other reason you say she'afani is that when you're running, 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 you are short breath. Kol hayom lochem yilchatzeni, all the day long, the warrior, lochem, presses on me. Because he is running, 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 because he's being pursued all the day long. And instead of fighting their enemies, they're going after him. Sha'afu. No, please notice he played on the word sha'afani. He repeats it. Sha'afu shorerai kol hayom. But they love alliteration. Sha'afu shorerai. Shuru means to see, to observe, to watch over, to scout. Shorerai is those that would besieging me. So shorerai here means those that are after me, but it means that they're standing looking for me. You understand? Searching for me. He's being scouted. They run after me, they look for me all the day. Kirabim lochamim li mahom. For many to battle for me.
Mahom means.
And there is no word there, bamahom. Lochamim li means they're fighting for me, which means they're fighting. If I'm fighting for the Israelites, I'm fighting. So either with them side by side or fighting on another front, but I'm fighting for the same cause.
Yes.
You got that?
Yes.
So what's the word mahom mean? Because it doesn't say bamahom, in a place, it means that he's referring to God. And he's merely reiterating the same thing. And that's exactly what Hadak says. He says he's saying the same thing twice in different ways. He says there's many that battle for me, and there's many that lochamim li, in this case, Radak would want us to treat it as are doing battle against me. But that's not what it says. Because you would say lochamim kenegdi, not li. So what is the other? But the word ma'om then becomes another appellation for God, the one on high. So just like he started, you know, he says chaneni elokim. In this verse, he's repeating, he didn't mention God, so it's, we would translate it. Shafu shalala. Would you read it for me?
For many battle against me, Most High.
But what's the first half of it?
My watchers yearn to swallow me each day.
That's the first verse. Mm-hmm. What did they do with the third verse?
Battle against me.
You see what they did? They skipped the redundancy. And then Radak goes and says, in the name of his father. I don't think that's the case. I think that a bek is missing. On the one hand, they go and run after, while many up above are fighting for me. For all the 29 that we lost, how many rockets have already been fired in Israel? It was well over 1,300 by Shabbos.
Okay.
How many? How many victims? It hit a kindergarten. Where were the kids?
Not there.
It hit a house in Ashdod. Where were they? I mean, you've got to be blind, stupid, to not see that there's a shield there. And David suddenly recognizes that I have lots of enemies and they're scouting and watching over me. But there is many that are fighting for me up above.
Mm-hmm.
Many are fighting for me up above. You see, Rashi doesn't answer either one. He says, Mahom is an appellation for God, and that's just a cry. Now, if you look carefully, I want you to look at the Te'amim. I want to show you a little bit about the notion of Te'amim and how one could try to see what the Pshat was. Under the Li, there is a little line like this that connects it to the next word. So the way it should be read, merely where the pauses is many do battle. Li Mahom. Many are the warriors. Marom li. But God is with me. Yom ira ani elecha eftach. The day that I am afraid, when I am afraid, as for me, I trust in you. And you see how nicely that would fit with li marom. I got nobody else. I got you. Just before they went into Gaza, somebody sent me a little clip that was taken. It was just remarkable. So you see these soldiers with kippot, without kippot, just before they went in, right before the incursion. Anachnu bnei amaminim bnei maminim ve'en lanu al mi leishaen ela al avinu shebashamayim. We are believers, the sons of believers, and we have no one to rely on except our Father in heaven. And you should have seen the way those soldiers were dancing. It was be'elohim ahalel. Ahalel dvaro, be'elohim batachti lo ira. By God, in the name of God, ahalel dvaro, I praise his word, meaning his Torah. Be'elohim batachti lo ira, I trusted, I will not fear. Mayase basali, what can mere flesh do to me? Kol hayom dvara ya'atzei, all the day long, they take my words and ya'atsevu. Very, very
Melashon
atzuf. Radak says they take my words and try to twist it into a reason. In other words, they're trying to be upset with the fact that I was destined to become king. Remember that David has already been anointed by Shmuel. He will be the next king. He knows it. Nobody else knows it. Do you understand? So, and of course, Shaul is beginning to suspect it. Shaul already has been told that his kingdom is being cut and he will not have a continuation. So he's, of course, terribly worried about who's the next heir, and he hates the next heir. And that's essentially what he says. So according to Radak, that's what is being said here. Rashi says, Matzivim oti rotfai. They make me sad until all my words are sad. And why is that unusual? Comes Fiverr Meltzer and says, this is the man of song who made other people feel happy. And now they have turned all of his songs into sad songs. So they Ya'atzavu dvarai. Kol hayom ya'atzavu dvarai. They have made my words sad. Alai kol machshevotam lira. All they can think about me is what's bad about me. They keep trying to conspire about what is bad. Malbim says this is the bemoaning of the Jew. They like us when we cry. They like us when we're down. And they'll always twist whatever we say for bad. Yaguru yitzponu. It's ktiv yitzponu, but we read yitzponu. Hema akava yishmohu. Now the problem is with the word yaguru. Yaguru can mean they live in a place. Yitzponu, tzofen, means they scout, they watch, they are careful. They follow my heels, right? They're looking for the footsteps and they are stalking him. The other word is the word yaguru. Is they are afraid. Afraid of me. And therefore, they stalk me. If I wasn't a threat, they wouldn't be doing this. Kashel kivu nafshi. They go after me because, for they hope to take my life, my soul. Now, there are some who says that they want to capture my soul, which means, technically speaking, they want to kill me. Others say, no, they want to twist me. They're trying to make me into an immoral person, either by maligning me or by putting me into a position where I have to do things that I'd rather not do. Who are the people that are running after him? They've been promised money. They've been promised favors by Shaul. And in order to justify their wanting to get this reward, they have to come up with something bad that David has done to justify their behavior. Al aven pelet lamo. They need to find fault with me because it's their interests. This is not about justice, it's about their ulterior motives. Therefore, he prays to God, Be'af amim horeb Elohim. Bring down those nations, God, in your fury. Rashi says it's not about other nations. His enemies now are not other nations. His enemies are people within. It's the tribalism within Am Yisrael. And therefore, he is actually cursing those that are searching him, and these people that he's calling Amim are the people that he is one of. But then he begs God, after he lets off his anger, Nodi Safalta Atla. Nodi comes from the word Nud, Lanud, and it means my wanderings. You've counted my wanderings. I've gone from place to place to place. Nodi safarta. All my wanderings you've counted. Ata, and as for you, simadimati benotcha. There's a play on the word nodi, melanud, which means to wander, and the word nod with an aleph, which means the container. Please put my tears. Save my tears.
Oh, and this is related to the poem.
Halo besifratecha. That's the source of the poem. Halo b'sifratecha. After all, it's in your... So the word, notice on the word, lispo, to count. Lesaper, to tell. La sefer, in your book. Hence the medrash that says that every tear that's shed is recorded. Every tear that's shed is preserved. Az yashuvu oivai aho. When you can count, that's where the source of the Medrash says, when this is all filled and recorded, and the tears collected, then my enemies will withdraw, pull back. On the day that I call out, Zeyadati, Kielohimli, this I know, even before that day, that God is
for me.
Be'elohim ahalel davar. I will praise the word of Elohim, by God. And he uses the word Elohim and repeats the same words, Behashem, Ahalel Davar. Says Radak, in the name of his father, when it's Midas Hadin, and I can't make sense of it, and the going is bad, I nevertheless praise him. And when it's going good and there's Midas Harachamim, I will praise him. I'm his, he's mine, and I'm his through the good and through the bad, when it makes sense and when it makes no sense at all. Belohim batachti. Do you see how he repeats this line? This is like a refrain. I have trusted God. Lo ira, I will not fear. Ma yase adam li. What will mere man do to me? The first time he used the word, what am I afraid of? Flesh. What will flesh do for me? Mere flesh. That's the lower enemies. Adam is a Jew. Now I'm going to explain to you why the Medrash goes and says that it must be a Jew. There's a very famous Medrash that was used to prove the Jews' racism and chauvinism in the very famous trial of Bayless, right before the rise of communism, the last days of the Tsar. There was a man named Bayless. And Bayless was charged with killing a Christian child. And that, at that time, aroused the entire Western world and the American ambassadors and so on and so forth. And Rabbonim from all over the world converged and came to St. Petersburg at that time for the Bayless trial. It is memorialized in Bernard Merlanwood's novel, The Fixer. And they, you know, out came one of the old blood libels. And the prosecuting attorney, the prosecutor, said to, isn't it true that in your Talmud it says, Atem kuim Adam ve'en agoyim kuim Adam? That you're called Adam and you don't consider other people human. That you consider other people not human. It's true, there is a Gemara like that. To which the response of, I believe it was Rav Kordzinski, he said, Adam is the kind of word for which there is no plural. There's not Adamim. There's no humans. He says, we have come here to support Bayless. From where? From the United States, from Poland, from France, from England, from all over the world. To us, we are one Jew. This sense of oneness is not found among the goyim. So when it says Adam alone, as opposed to Ha-Adam, Ha-Adam, when it appears in the Torah, the Gemara says, means any human being. When it says Adam, it's the Jew. So he's not afraid of any flesh, meaning animal or beast, and he's not afraid of any Jew. Then he says, Maya se Adamli, what can he possibly do? Alai Elohim nedarecha. I accept all of the oaths and promises that I made. I will keep those promises. Because when a person is in trouble, he says, God, if you get me out of this, I will do A, B, C, D. Right? We make a lot of deals with God. I promise you, I will keep them. Ashalem todot lach. I will pay off my gratitude and the sacrifices of gratitude. Kihitzalta nafshi mimavet. You saved my soul from death. Halo raglai midechi. You saved my foot from falling into the stumbling block, into a pit. So that I've lived another day, lihitalech lifnei Elokim, so that I can walk before God, meaning in the presence of God, living a life as a Jew. You saved me from death. You saved my foot from stumbling because I might have survived death and remained ois mensch. I could have gone off the derech. So that I can live here to live, to walk before God, be'or ha'chaim, in the light of life. That means according to the light of Torah.